Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
I believe united we stand, and we have common ground to find, and we're going to find it. We're not
even sitting here.
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind, a look at this week in the Capitol, but first, wish I was there. Pretty sharp exchange between Democratic Senator Tim Carpenter of Milwaukee and Mark Hogan, CEO of the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, on the FISR potential tax incentives. And then we have a emotional debate, emotional testimony over the environmental threats posed by large dairy farms. And finally, more emotional debate on the safety and active shooter situations when classroom doors are locked shut. Wish I was there.
The FISR money that we'd given, that was in the Foxconn legislation. I think I asked you previously, but in that bill, they were given several million dollars. Shortly after that, they gave money to the naming rights for the Milwaukee Bucks Arena. My concern was we shouldn't have been, giving them money so that they possibly could go ahead and use taxpayer money to name a basketball facility after their company.
Tim, did we sign that? Have we signed a contract for that?
I think we voted on it, and it's out there. So the question I would have would be...
You always have about 70% of the facts.
Oh, Mr. Chairman?
We have not...
Mr. Chair... Hey,
we have
Mr.
Not
Hogan...
Signed.
We Mr. Hogan?
Hold it. Hold it. Take a deep breath.
No. Excuse me, Mr. Chair. I'm a member of this committee. And he...
I know, but that's...
I apologize.
Yeah, he made a comment about something, and I want to have the right to defend that comment. I don't remember anyone serving on a committee where someone makes a comment like that.
Senator, I apologize.
Okay. Thank you.
We have not... we did approve it at the board. If it were to move forward, we would... it would have to go completely through our underwriting procedure. So at this point, FISRP has no tax dollars whatsoever.
As a result of the increasing number of industrial-sized farms, we see the same negative impacts on many rural communities and families throughout our state. Industrial-sized farms create massive amounts of animal waste in a very concentrated area. Before the rotted manure is land spread, it is liquefied, move to massive holding storage pits where it sits, cooks, ferments, and turns into a slurry of the most nauseating material with an odor that causes humans to choke and gag, or even worse, become ill.
We are a family farm. We are not an industrial farm. We are not a corporate farm. I think that we have implemented every practice that the DNR has thrown our way. And we do as good a job as we can possibly do, because we live in the community where we farm. We want clean air, we want clean water, just the same as every other person.
When we think about an active shooting incident, and I hate to bring up the word shooting incident, but during those times, a lot of teachers have been trained to barricade the doors, pile up the desks, do all those things. I just look at this from my standpoint. My children are too young to be in school, but if I heard of an active incident at a school, I would want my teachers and administrators to be empowered with every tool possible to protect my children.
Locked classroom doors in themselves have proven incredibly effective over the years. There is no known incident in U.S. history where a mass murderer has penetrated a locked classroom door. It has not happened. It didn't happen in Parkland. It hadn't happened at Sandy Hook. It did not happen at Columbine. It's just not a thing that happens.
JR, you have been all over this redistricting cases in federal court. Yesterday there was a ruling had to do with legal fees. Is it going to end, finally, this lawsuit filed by Democrats and voters that attacked the redistricting lines that the Republicans drew in 2011?
Unless there's an appeal. So, I mean, the merits of the case are done. The U.S. Supreme Court has laid down a ruling that says basically the question of partisan gerrymanders is beyond the reach of the federal courts.
Right.
What this is all about is whether the Democrats who sued over those lines should have to cover the legal bills of Republicans who hired outside attorneys to represent them. So let's kind of rewind. The suit was first filed in 2015.
Yep.
Then Attorney General Brad Schimmel took the lead on this case, defending the maps. In 2017, Republican leaders approved hiring outside counsel at taxpayer expense to intervene and to provide their perspective, essentially. As this case wound through the courts, remember the three-judge panel here in Madison overturned the maps,
yep.
Went to the U.S. Supreme Court. Court said those Democrats who sued did not have standing. It goes back to three-judge panel for more considerations. While it was there, Republicans then approved hiring another set of attorneys in 2018 at a cost of $850,000 for a flat fee,
right.
Not including costs. As this was happening, Brad Schimmel lost the case. Two other states, Maryland and North Carolina, had their maps go to the U.S. Supreme Court.
Yep.
Court sent down its ruling and said, no, you can't do these cases in federal courts. What they were asking for in this piece was that from January 4th, the day the Supreme Court sort of oral arguments for those two states, mm-hmm. through now, that Democrats had to cover the legal fees racked up as attorneys.
Democrats had to pay the legal fees of the opposing GOPers, right?
And the three-judge panel said no.
Yesterday?
Yes. Okay. Basically that the actions of the Democrats were reasonable, that the courts in years past had sent a signal that there was a chance to have these maps challenged in court. U.S. Supreme Court changed that with that decision, but they were acting under the reasonable expectation that there could be something happen. And oh, by the way, post-January 4th, the three-judge panel had actually green-lighted going forward on discovery, so that way if the U.S. Supreme Court had said, yes, you can challenge maps, they could quickly go into a trial mode and get things done.
What's the best estimate of what we taxpayers are on the hook for, given all these lawsuits?
Well, let's start big picture, go down to the finite number. So big picture, there was also a second lawsuit filed back, I think in 2011, over the map right after it was basically, before it was even passed maybe, but that lawsuit was filed. That one plus this one gets us $3.8 million, depending on how much you want to round up and down. And now, my last ask for legal bills was through like the end of July, so I haven't seen anything new since then. But $3.8 million total for these maps. In this case alone, just the one filed in 2015, $1.7 million, roughly, again.
Okay.
Now, what I don't know is like what was post-January 4th, because in legal bills that I've reviewed, they don't break down like the dates of like this fee was paid for this date versus this date. Okay, I do see costs, but like the Bartlett Beck, the firm hired for $850,000, they don't break down their hours of like post and pre-January 4th.
Okay, but final question on this topic before we move on to other stuff. Yesterday's ruling by the federal judges, good or bad news for we Wisconsin taxpayers paying these bills?
Oh, we're on the hook for it right now. Now, okay. The only thing is if Republican light leaders want to go appeal this decision, mm-hmm. they have that option. Then they appeal it and go forward. I don't know if they're going to do that yet. They're still reviewing their options.
Okay, thanks. I want to talk about 15 cabinet appointees of the governor, and I want to get into it with this exchange with the Senate Health Committee just this week on the issue. Should Andrea Palm, Secretary of the Department of Health Services, be confirmed? Let's listen to some of the back and forth, please.
There are conflicts of interest within the department as a result of Ms. Palm's tenure and the decisions as a leader of that department, particularly dealing with bringing on board in her number two position, the longtime lobbyist and head of the legal team for the state and nation's largest abortion provider, who she called her first choice and number one draft pick on the basis of that experience. Somebody who was the head of their legal team that organization had just earlier this year initiated a lawsuit against the state, and throughout the budget process advocating for directing and diverting existing state funds that go to local health departments to Planned Parenthood in a situation where there is an audit that was actually just concluded going back over 3 years where over two-thirds of the billing by Planned Parenthood to the state was found to be improper. For a number of reasons, I'll be voting against her confirmation today.
The first thing is that 99.999% of what this department does not relate to abortion issues. It relates to the health of Wisconsin. And when we're talking about public policy and management of the health of Wisconsin, a lot of this shouldn't be partisan issues. There will be, but a lot of the management of it is just simply the blocking and tackling of getting things done, which she has the resume for. And I feel like she's qualified for the job, and it's the governor's appointee, so I will be supporting her nomination for that reason.
The state of Wisconsin is unbelievably fortunate to have someone of her caliber and experience come to the state of Wisconsin and lead DHS? Just the fact that even though the legislature ended up saying no through the Finance Committee, she was able to show us how to leverage $1.6 billion in federal funding shows us exactly how smart she is. She is the absolute right person for this job right now, and she's got a great supporting staff, whether you agree with them philosophically or not.
Okay, I refer to the 15 cabinet secretaries. None of them have been confirmed. They're basically in two different statuses. Mm-hmm. First, you have 10, including the Children and Families Revenue, Financial Institutions, Health Services, Administration, PSC Chair, Transportation, Debt Cap, Veterans Affairs, Corrections, who have been approved by committees. They could be confirmed if they got a full Senate vote here when the Senate comes back in October. And then moving on to the next five, you have five cabinet appointees of the governor who haven't even yet had a committee vote. Mm-hmm. Secretary of Natural Resources, Safety and Professional Services, Workforce Development, Tourism, and the latest appointee, Housing and Economic Development. These people have been on the jobs, with the exception of Housing and Economic Development, for 9 months. Mm-hmm. What's going on?
Well, let's a couple things up front. One, this does nothing impact their ability to do their job.
They're so on the job.
They've been on the job since January. They're getting paid. They have the authority. There's nothing other than the vote that changes for them. The dynamic is this. We are waiting to see if any of these nominees can get 17 Republican votes. We've talked about this before. Scott Fitzgerald has a rule of thumb, and basically every leader I've covered has a rule of thumb, that you don't take anything to the floor unless you have the 17 votes you need in the Senate from your caucus to pass it. If you took any of these nominees to the floor right now, my bet is they would be confirmed, because you get 14 Democratic votes right away.
Right.
Each committee vote we've seen so far, there have been at least two Republican votes. That gets you to 16. You need just one more Republican to confirm you, end of story. The problem is, how do you address having a nominee who's got 10 Republican votes and 9 no Republican votes? What do you do then? Is it worth putting the person on the floor? Do that. The going wisdom has been that Fitzgerald would not put somebody like that on the floor, would just let him keep serving. You're not rejecting him, but you're also not putting the floor for a split vote of, you know, 14 Dems, X Republicans saying yes and Y saying no.
But this is a Senate that within the last 2 years, who did they fire? Either the elections commission.
Elections and ethics.
So elections and
different
ethics.
Different appointees. They're not appointees of the governors.
Okay. Right? So you don't
see the governor's cabinet. This is a different story.
You don't see those votes that fired elections and ethics as a precedent for potentially defeating some of these cabinet secretaries?
Totally different situation, because you had Republicans who are hot over the entire John Doe 2 investigation. Remember Leah Vukmir, former state senator?
Yes.
Some of her records ended up in this stuff. I mean, like, there's all kinds of, like, levels of anger in the Republican circles about those, just the old GAB in general. And because those two gentlemen had worked for the old GAB and had their fingers in some way in the pie of John Doe 2, mm-hmm. they were never going to get support of that Republican caucus. Much different story. Here you have a Democratic governor who's picked his cabinet, people he wants to work for him, right? So it's a much different situation, because here, let's look at Craig Thompson. If you reject Craig Thompson, who's going to replace him? Craig Thompson has an excellent reputation among the Capitol people I talked to.
The chairman of Senate Transportation defended him.
Working on both sides of the aisle for a long time. So if you reject Craig Thompson, who's not known as a flaming liberal in the Capitol, who are you going to get? Andrea Palm. All right. So Senator Jock has concerns because the agency hired somebody to work in the number three spot, assistant deputy secretary, work for Planned Parenthood.
Yes.
If you shoot down Andrea Palm, it's not going to change that person's appointment, because they're on the job. You know, Tony Evers supports abortion rights. That doesn't change.
Okay.
Palm has got national experience from the Obama administration. She's qualified for the job. If you fire her, you know, by shooting her down, what changes? Who do you get instead? And that's a dynamic here where, yeah, they could vote them down, but they're not going to.
Okay, last question on this subject. Do you expect the Senate committees that have not yet voted on these five appointees at least to hold a vote prior to the October session?
There's no guarantee. I mean, there's an interesting dynamic where Senator Jock, he chairs a committee that has Caleb Frostman's appointment before it.
Okay.
Caleb Frostman and Andre Jacques were in a heated election, two of them actually,
right.
Last year, remember?
Yes,
so,
special election and then the general.
So there's that dynamic going on. Cole, nominated for DNR, Chair Tom Tiffany raised concerns about his appointment during the confirmation hearing. Public hearing, so I don't know what's happening with that. We're waiting to see
but
what
Republican Governor Scott Walker put Cole on the DNR board.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay.
So,
All right, moving on.
Guess what? So this is politics.
Thank you. Let's move on. We don't often talk about energy, but anytime our PSC unanimously approves a new high-power transmission line that's costing $492 million. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about it a little bit. You had the unanimous approval of the Cardinal Hickory Creek transmission line from Dubuque to Middleton. It's a joint venture of the American Transmission Company, ITC Midwest, and Dairyland Power Cooperative. It'll go through, you ready, Cassville, Lancaster, Montfort, Dodgeville, Mount Horeb. Commissioners said the line will save money for ratepayers. You had three Democratic legislators then issue a statement saying, we don't like this decision. But it goes through Senator Howard Marklines, Travis Tranel, and Mr. Republican Representative Novak. So talk to me about why Democrats don't like this. Republicans were silent.
Well, I think the best guess I have is that Republican, like Mark Ryan's statement, was his constituents were heard and they made this decision. So he wanted to make sure at least people were heard. But there's going to be a debate about, not in my backyard, about the cost of building a line. Don't forget, we're also building a line, I mean, we ratepayers,
yeah,
between to the Foxconn site in southeastern Wisconsin.
That's a good point.
When I first got here more than 19 years ago, we had some of the lowest electric rates in the nation, right? In the Midwest, at least, if not the nation.
And now it's flipped.
But infrastructure is going way up. We've built lots of power lines. We've built new power plants. That costs money. Ratepayers pay it. So there are concerns of lines running through your backyard, the cost, all kinds of things like that. They're going into this, the politics of these decisions.
Okay. I just want to look at two responses. The chairman of the PSC said this new power line will be a cornerstone of the transition from fossil fuels to a clean energy grid and provide a value to Wisconsin at a reasonable cost. George Meyer, former DNR secretary, now head of the Wisconsin Wildlife Federation, says it could pose environmental damages. George's statement: the new towers will have significant and undue adverse impacts on environmental values, including land and water resources. But $492 million line is a big deal.
Yeah.
Okay. Last week, after we taped Rewind, Governor Evers announced a clean energy goal. So let's listen to part of his statement on setting a goal for 2050. Please.
I'm excited to sign this executive order declaring our goal to move Wisconsin to 100% clean energy by 2050. For far too long, clean energy has not been a priority in our state, and we're going to change that. And we're going to adopt policies that will reduce greenhouse gases, gas emissions, and reduce the impact of fossil fuel that is affecting our state. We're also going to be innovative and forward-thinking when it comes to clean energy and combating climate change. Unlike the past, everything is on the table. We're looking at things like setting new energy-saving goals for state agencies, increasing the use of solar power, and helping businesses and communities make smart energy decisions.
Here's the element of this that interests me. In his February budget, the governor asked for six positions, $6.2 million, to help us achieve this clean energy goal of 2050. The Republicans said no. He's now issued an order. He signs a order setting the 2050 goal for state to be powered by clean energy, creating the Office of Sustainability and Clean Energy in the Department of Administration. He says this is not a mandate, but officials will work with utilities and nonprofits on benchmark goals. How are the Republicans who wouldn't go along with the six positions and $6.2 million going to respond to this? Are they?
Not that thrilled. I mean, like, this is governed by executive order. He was stymied by Republicans in the budget, so now he's putting out executive orders trying to lay out his goals. The questions are things like, okay, if it's not a mandate, how do you get utilities to get there?
Right.
You know, there are worries about if we're really ready to go carbon free by that date, if the technology is there, if we're going to rely on solar energy, how's that work in December and January and February in Wisconsin? We know it's kind of gray sometimes. So I've heard all these kinds of like questions being raised about this, and I don't think the answer's out there just yet, but Republicans are kind of a little bit like, they got some questions about this.
With Brazil's Amazon forest burning, I mean, you and I have been following that. Do you see climate change climbing as more of an issue in the 2020 elections?
Nationally or like at the state level?
State level.
Good question. I mean, again, look at those maps. Like, there's a partisan divide in this issue, it seems like, sometimes. I mean, I haven't looked at the Marquette poll recently about where they're at or where what people believe is the cause. But is a driving issue for people in Wisconsin about what's going to happen in the presidential race? For some people, I'm sure. But I just don't know like how big of an impact it'd be for voters, you know, 14 months from now.
Yeah, that's a good point. Well, the takeaway here is the debate is not only in Washington about our energy future, but it's here in Wisconsin. The U.S. government realigned the rules on hemp, and we had to pass a bill. We have to pass a bill that brings us into compliance with new federal law. Now, initially, the law enforcement didn't like that because it would have prevented police stops of someone who had consumed legal CBD oil, which contains trace very small amounts of THC. This week, the Senate committee unanimously approved a bill that brings us in line, making the concession. Drivers can have trace amounts of this as long as it's far below the level considered intoxicated in blood. The reason I think this is important, because if we don't pass this, all of the new crop, I'm sorry, the new crop of hemp farmers, mix up metaphors, could have been jeopardized here if we're not in compliance. So I see this as something coming up in October, don't you?
Possibly. It's interesting. The movement on hemp, I mean, that's one thing people are embracing. It seems popular politically. You know, by the way, don't forget, hemp, not to fuse hemp with marijuana, but pot's going to be legal in Illinois in just a few months.
That's a good point. And the Beloit police are very concerned about that. Excuse me.
But Big change coming just south of the border.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, well, I do expect the Senate and the Assembly to take this hemp bill in the October session. Another item, Paul Ryan is moving to Maryland. So he can put on his big M hat instead of flipping the W. He's moving his family to a suburb of Washington. He cited a desire when he said he wasn't going to seek re-election, spend more time with his family. He was there 20 years, first U.S. House Speaker from Wisconsin. Now, talk to me now about what he does. He runs a nonprofit, American Idea Foundation, and he's on the board of directors for Fox Corp.
Yep.
But he's not selling his Janesville home.
No. So it sounds like the move is temporary, is not permanent. So we'll see. Honestly, like I asked one of his aides, like, what was going on? They just gave a simple statement. He's moving out there, point out that his wife has family in Maryland near them, so he'll be closer to them.
Yeah.
So I don't think Paul Ryan's going to abandon Wisconsin anytime soon, but I'm not quite sure what this is the next sign of in his career. Don't forget, his political career is probably over. You know, I get the impression talking to people that Paul Ryan knew, became Speaker of the House, that any ambitions he had about being president someday, not that he really had a burning desire to do that, but that those are over. Simply because you don't make that jump from Speaker to President. Just not good history in our country with that.
Right.
And once he fought the wars he fought and as House Speaker, it was reinforced the idea that this was not going anywhere for him. Plus, two, think of the Republican Party. Republicans like Paul Ryan thought that they were the core of the Republican Party, you know, 10, 15 years ago. It was all about these financial issues, trade, taxes, you know, abortion. They realize that there's much more populist,
debt.
Doesn't even talk about much anymore, does it?
No.
But there's a much more of a populist faction in that Republican Party now that was really embraced Donald Trump. The Republican Party we know nationally is not the party of Paul Ryan anymore. It's the party of Donald Trump. And so unless there is some kind of a course correction for Republicans, it would be another example of why Paul Ryan isn't much of a politically.
I see his move with his family to Maryland, meaning that he will cast no shadow over Wisconsin elections in 2020, or a very small shadow. Do you agree?
Well, who would he? I mean, I guess, like, Brian's style, sure, like, you know, he'd want Paul Ryan to a fundraiser for him. But you think Donald Trump's going to campaign with Paul Ryan around the state?
No.
Like, again, the party has changed, shifted away from Paul Ryan and toward Donald Trump. I don't know that Paul Ryan's, his numbers in the among Republicans have dropped steadily, even in Wisconsin during the time of Trump. I don't know how much of a surrogate he would be for somebody. There's no election statewide other than the presidency. I can't see him campaigning for Trump, especially what he said about him.
Right.
So, and I don't know that former speakers of the House go out and campaign for members of the Assembly.
Yeah. Okay. You've also given your stock picker of the week off.
Yeah.
But let's talk about some odds and ends. Now, you reported that Republican campaign officials in Washington ran a trial balloon. State Senator Pat Teston versus 3rd District Congressman Ron Kind. What happened there?
A month ago, I got a poll from the NRCC with a named Republican candidate, basically neck and neck with Ron Kind. And when I got it, it was basically in the time as, okay, here is an effort by Republicans to try and draft somebody in. They wouldn't tell me who the candidate was that they paired against Ron Kind, but they wanted to send a message that Kind was vulnerable, all right? And remember, Ron Kind's been on the watch list since 2016 when he was unopposed, but Donald Trump won his district in western Wisconsin by, like, I think 4.5 percentage points. Now, fast forward to 2019. Ron Kind has $2.6 million in the bank. He won re-election last year with like 59% of the vote, roughly. Wasn't much of a challenge in 2018, much of an environment. But Republicans still are nationally, at least, are saying there's a shot with Ryan because Trump will do well in Western Wisconsin again. They can beat Ryan. They don't have anybody yet. They ran this poll, and I had a source tell me it was Teston. I confirmed it with him.
Was it news to Teston that they were going to?
He had heard about it. You know,
signed off on it?
He said he was encouraged by Sean Duffy to run, that others had talked to him, but he's focused on his reelect to state Senate. Don't forget, he's a freshman who beat Julie Lassa for a seat when kind of that area around Wausau, and to his point, went Trumpian in 2016. Mm-hmm. He's a top target for Democrats for a Senate seat because, well, Scott Walker won that seat, so did Tammy Baldwin. So it is really probably an uphill fight for Democrats because that shit place has moved away from them. He's also got $200,000 in the bank for a state Senate reelect.
Okay. So Teston said, no, I'm not going to run against Ron Kind. Mm-hmm. Have you heard in the name of any Democrats? I've mentioned Katrina Shanklin, but she's no closer to running against him, is she?
I don't know. Been trying to reach out. But what this tells me is that nationally, Republicans see Ron Kind as vulnerable. In Western Wisconsin, they go, we've seen this show before.
Yes.
So, yeah, you know, on the numbers, Ron Kind seems vulnerable. But he was also, in 2016, had no opponent. So it wasn't campaigning. People kind of took Wisconsin for granted. It's not going to happen in 2020. Ron Kind has the biggest war chest of any member of Congress. He is more, people I've talked to, Republicans in the Western Wisconsin, say they've seen him more out there the last few months, knowing what's coming in 2020. And they're having a hard time shaking the trees for somebody to come run against them because the people in Wisconsin go, they've seen this before Ron Kind. He's been there for 20 years. He's got all this money. You got to start from scratch now. We're end of August. We're a year and 2 months out from the election trying to match that. And Republicans keep saying the money would be there.
Okay,
well, we'll see.
Teston is a top target of Democrats. Mm-hmm. Now let's talk about a top target of the GOP. Mm-hmm. A candidate was just announced for in the 10th state Senate district against Democratic Senator Patty Shockner. Sherry Link from Somerset, a small business person. What are you hearing about that race, quickly?
Top GOP target. Patty Shockner won a special election of a strong Republican seat with 17 points for President Trump in 2016. It was the first sign of the blue wave in 2018. Ever since then, she's been marked as a top target for 2020 because got to hold that seat with Trump at the top of the ticket. Normal environment, not a special election in January, but a normal turnout in November. Very difficult to hold that seat for her. Definitely going to be a target. The question for me is, will there be a GOP primary in that district? I'm not sure about that yet.
Oh, okay. Fascinating. Just a couple programming notes. Number one, because of the Labor Day weekend, there'll be no Rewind next week. And also, I'm taking a couple weeks off. Rewind is in JR's very capable hands for a couple weeks. And I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm JR Ross.
And that's Rewind for August 23rd.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.